Hello again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Joe Donahue. We'll be discussing birds today on the show. Rich Guthrie is here to help answer your questions about them, a veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, and compiler of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society. Rich is our resident avian expert, and it is a pleasure to welcome him back to our microphones. Hello, Rich.
Hello there, Joe. Good afternoon.
It is wonderful to see you. Also joining us today, Nancy Castillo, author of Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga Springs, New York. Nancy, always nice to have you on the program as well.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank
Good
you.
To be here.
The number to call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1. And we would love for you to be a part of the discussion. A reminder, you can also comment on the Vox Pop page of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can check in on Facebook at facebook.com/wamcradio. You can tweet us, and how appropriate, at wamcvoxpop or email voxpop@wamc.org. With all of that underway, out of the way, complete, finished, we move on to the actual core of the program, and it's, again, great to see you both. So where are we? The birds are starting to move, yes?
Yeah, they are. There are a lot of things going on out there in the bird world. This year's crop of young birds is pretty well hatched out and getting their wings and growing up and learning the tricks of survival. And following that is their escape from the brutal winters of the Northeast, heading on down to the balmy tropics for the winter.
So they're headed to wherever south may be.
Warm and comfortable, yes. For those that need to do that. These are the bug eaters and the like that won't find much food here in the winter.
And at your bird feeders, what you'll be seeing is lots of ruby-throated hummingbirds as they fatten up for that migration that Rich is talking about. In May we have the anticipation of the hummingbirds, but in August I think is about the craziest time at your feeders with those hummingbirds. So it's an exciting time.
Crazy time. That's good.
And hummingbirds will do that to you. They are so active and so delightful to just watch and attract them to your yard and enjoy them as they come and go.
How much has weather played in what we have seen this summer? It has been perhaps colder than usual. We have not had any really oppressively hot days. It's been a little wet.
Not much.
Yeah, not much.
Not like last year.
No.
So this year, actually, I believe, and time will tell, there'll be ways of checking this out. But I do believe that this has been a bountiful year for songbird reproduction and the health of the populations. A lot of good things going on out there. A lot of people are caring and maintaining good habitat in their backyards and neighborhoods and helping them out in that respect, which is critically important. So, I think this year's the weather and environmental conditions have been much improved and looks to me like it might be a good year for the birds.
Wonderful. And so far, so good, even for what we see at our feeders.
For the feeder birds. Yep. They've been busy. Lots of babies coming through the yard. and we still have, like, goldfinches yet. They're one of the latest nesters out there. So I'd say that baby goldfinches are probably just about showing up now. So.
Well, not surprisingly, we have a ton of people on the phone, so I want to get to as many calls as we possibly can. Rich Guthrie, Nancy Castillo here. We welcome your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1. We begin with Natalie in Poughkeepsie. Good morning, or good afternoon, Natalie. Hello, Natalie. Good afternoon, Natalie.
I like Poughkeepsie.
Hello.
Natalie. Come on up.
All right.
I'm going to put Natalie back on. Whoop. All right, that would be bad. All right. Now we're going to try Lynn in Shelburne Falls. Hello, Lynn.
Hello.
How are you?
You probably know me by now. I'm pretty good today. How are you?
Good.
I got lots of titmice right now, babies too. And the other day, one that really described this white bird again, remember? I was talking about this bird that was it has stripes.
Okay.
A couple weeks ago, and we were trying to look it up. I know what cockatiels look like. I know what red-eyed doves look like. This must have been some kind of a albino something or other, because it's predominantly white.
Okay.
And had a couple black lines across it. I remember, I didn't describe it right at all. And it had, like, black lines going horizontally, almost horizontally through it. Like, you know, black little worms. It wasn't, like, complete black lines. It was, like, partial black lines.
And how big was this bird?
This bird was a little, I would say, bigger than a cowbird and maybe a robin size.
Okay. And were you able to associate it with any other birds coming to the feeder or in the backyard, keeping company?
No, no, I was not in the feeder in the backyard. In fact, I was driving down my country road, and I stopped to look at this thing because it was amazing looking.
Okay.
And that's, you know, it wasn't there again ever.
Right, right, right. Well, probably it sounds like one of these birds that we call colloquially a sport. Or partial albino, or partially leucistic bird.
Oh.
That has these aberrant markings on it. So they're really a challenge to kind of to identify because they don't follow the patterns that the books will help us identify. So you have to go by other characteristics: size, shape, and the basic or the underlying coloration. And association. So without all that, we're going to have to work on this thing as being something of a mystery unless we have other characteristics that we can pick up on.
I don't know what else I could tell you except that it's shaped like a cowbird, but it's, I'm going to say it's maybe 7 inches or maybe
yes.
7 inches.
Well, one thing that does happen with cowbirds, the young cowbirds that come out, they're very gray in coloration.
Mm-hmm.
And as the young males mature, they develop patches and splotches of black that take over the gray color. So if it's a young male cowbird, the black will come in random patches, and the gray will diminish.
It was so white. It might have been a large cowbird.
Okay, or a partial albino.
Would that be a Holstein?
A Holstein.
Yeah,
oh, good joke.
Thank you.
Anyway, there's one more little thing I just want to add. I had three, four hundred bronze blackbirds flying through my yard yesterday. Just kept flying through and landed and flying through, and some of them were grackles, and I just thought that was amazing.
Yep. Like Rich said, birds are on the move, and red-winged blackbirds, grackles, you will see in those huge flocks as they start to gather for their migration, for their movement. So
it was amazing.
Yep.
And that will be kind of the telltale of the autumn season, the groups of birds flocking up, gathering up to move south.
Lynn, thank you very much for the telephone call. Let's move on now to Jack in Glenville. Jack, go ahead.
Hello there.
Hello there.
Hi, Jack.
Listen, this year, I'm pretty sure it's only this year that I've seen it. I've got a bird coming in that I just cannot find in the books, and I really don't know what it is. Usually comes in with the blackbirds, red-winged blackbirds, and the cowbirds, and sometimes with a bunch of sparrows. The size is larger than a sparrow, but smaller than a robin, slimmer than a robin also. In fact, you know, originally I just thought it was an awful big sparrow. But the discerning mark on it, it had two stripes, like over the brow going towards the back of the head, one on each side. And that's what really caught my attention.
Was it a streaked bird?
A streaked bird? You mean overall?
Yes.
Well, it did have streaks like some of the sparrows do, yeah.
I think we're thinking down the same.
Yeah, I think if it does have that, and if it's with the blackbirds, it's a good likelihood that it's a female red-winged blackbird, which does
You're
have
kidding.
That pronounced pattern on it. Have you been seeing female red wings in with the rest of the flocks?
I don't know how to tell a female red wing black from a male.
It doesn't look anything like the male. I'll tell you that. They're totally
I'm guessing there's
looking.
More than one way to tell.
Yes, well, they know.
They know.
But It looks like a misplaced sparrow, but the main thing is the shape of the beak on it and the association. And I think we're probably check the field guides for a female red-winged blackbird, and I bet you that you'll have a bingo there.
Okay, and so the female is a little smaller than the male?
Yes, it is.
God, I can't believe it. I see the red-winged blackbirds almost every year. Once in a while, they don't seem to show up in the numbers that they do from year to year, but this year has been pretty good. And I just thought they all look the same, I guess.
Well,
I never saw the other one.
Half of them will be
okay,
different.
Let me ask you one other prick question,
all
if
right.
I may.
What you got?
This is the coldest summer, coolest summer, mm-hmm. that we've had in a long, long time. Mm-hmm. Only 5 days of 90 degrees temperature.
So far. Go ahead.
Yeah, well,
good point, Rich.
I don't expect August to be, that warm based on what's going on.
Okay.
So do you look for a early migration going on, maybe?
No, not at all. They
really?
Birds respond to other stimuli than temperature and local climatic conditions. They have a bigger picture to work off of, and so it's the amount of sunlight, daylight in the sky, and also genetic imprint that causes them to want to move out before it's too late.
And also, I would imagine, the availability of food.
Well, not necessarily, because some of our insect-eating birds are leaving while we have an abundance of insects. The swallows, for example, are all flocking up and heading south while there's plenty of food out there. So that's not the trigger.
Okay, well, thank you. This is a great... I just look forward to this program so much.
Well, Jack, I'm glad you called.
Okay.
We like you too, Jack.
Take care.
Thank you very much. Nancy Casillo and Rich Guthrie are our guests this afternoon on Vox Pop. We're talking about birds, and we welcome your phone calls. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-34-TALK-1. We will continue talking about hummingbirds and bird feeders and raptors and all kinds of other good stuff when we return. 1-800-348-2551.
Support comes from Unison Arts, New Paltz, a hula hoop workshop for kids and adults with the Brooklyn-based acrobatic hoop dance duo, The Mandalias, Saturday, August 16th at 11. UnisonArts.org. The Honest Wade Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Ave in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWade.coop. Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance November 12th through the 14th at the Gideon Putnam Resort, Saratoga Springs, with registration now open. CurranCompliance.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, presenting the Round the Lake Challenge, providing 30 missions to explore Lake George. LGLC.org. And Taft Farms, Great Barrington, now harvesting pesticide-free vegetables from their 200-acre IPM farm, sweet corn, berries, and 75 varieties of heirloom tomatoes. Open daily, taftfarms.com.
Welcome back to the round. This name of this show that I host only occasionally, you can tell, is Vox Pop. Good afternoon and welcome this afternoon, Rich Guthrie, Nancy Castillo, and we welcome your phone calls. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1. In the calls that we've gotten so far, we've heard people looking to the robin as a way of identifying another bird, and I assume that's because it's a very common bird.
It's a good one to use as a size measure and shape.
So let me ask you about the robin, okay?
Because
I have this robin issue at my house, and I want you to help in a family and some family turmoil, okay? So we have a camp over in a lake. All right. And it's all our families get together and we come over. So when we're out near the camp, a few feet from the camp, we have our grill out and we do our thing. Well, right under one of the eaves of the camp, there are three or four long like fence posts, but say like, the fence posts, but long.
Okay.
All right. And we use them to guide things during the fall, and they're just up on the side of the camp. Well, on the top of those, a robin has built a nest.
Uh-huh.
On top of that, under the eaves.
It will do that.
And I would say maybe, let's say 8 inches between the top of the very top of the posts to the eave of the house.
Okay.
Of the camp. All right. Now, when you're grilling and you're out and you're talking and you're doing the things that you do in summer, the birds come and they buzz you because they're going back and forth and going into their home.
Right.
Now, there were members of my family who wanted to take away that home, and I said, "Well, no, that's their home. Don't touch it." Now, so I said, "Well, they must have babies or they wouldn't be doing that." And from my reading that robins can nest perhaps two or three times during
that's correct. Yes.
During a summer.
Right.
So it would be very possible even this late that they would be perhaps have babies?
Well, it could very well be. And you could check by getting up on a stepladder and holding a mirror over the rim of the nest and looking in to see if there's any eggs or young in there.
Okay, now, so my question, though, because I've tried to look in and I haven't seen anything,
okay.
But I don't know. But my question is, would they live there? Would they continue to live there? Or once they're done their business, would they leave?
They're gone.
Okay.
So empty
if
nest.
There's, all right. So if they're still there, that means there's something going on, right?
If
and we shouldn't
active,
disturb it.
Well, that's correct. It'd be a nice thing not to. And if you can shift activities around to accommodate them, they'll be gone pretty soon. This is late in the season. They ought to be done.
They have been there for a good month, I would
say.
But is that normal?
Yes.
Okay.
And if that's the case, then their brood ought to be ready to fledge, and they will be home free and ready to go.
And you should start seeing heads popping over the edge of it, and you know they should become visible to you as they because they they get big in that nest. So.
Well, right, you don't want to hurt me. So
one
so,
way to tell for sure is if you see an adult bird flying with food in its beak, you know, a worm hanging out of its beak, it's taking it to babies.
Okay.
They're opportunistic. If there's food, they're going to eat it wherever they caught it. But if they're carrying it from A to B, that's for a reason.
Given the eaves of the house, usually we're sort of ducking for cover, so I don't really get to see what's in their beaks. But I'll have to look at it.
When they come and go, and going activity will be a big clue.
Yes, but the point is not to disrupt them.
No, not let them fledge, and then you can, take those beams and posts out and put them to work where they're supposed to be.
Janine, if you're listening. Okay. let's go to Margie in Olive Bridge. Go ahead.
Hey there, folks.
Hi there.
Hi, Margie.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you for this great program. While I was listening to Jack talk about that bird that he wanted to identify, I wondered if maybe it might have been a female, a rose-breasted grosbeak?
Oh, very good point, Marge. Yes. But that would have a massive bill, and it would not necessarily hang out with the red-winged blackbirds.
But I have seen them around the same time.
Yes, and that's a very good point.
And those striking eyebrows, that's what I thought of right away.
Good point, Marge. Like it.
Okay, yay. Hey, so as you observed before, the hummingbird thing is on, and it's really cool. It's the best ever. I've seen, 7 hummingbirds zooming around the feeder that I have in the front, and, of course, there's a lot of activity in the back. It was to the point where I have been, needing to refill the feeder sometimes twice a day.
Yippee.
Great.
Really blowing me away. And then one day a little guy came along and said, "This is mine, and no one else can go near it." And it was like a couple of days where he was completely scaring everybody else off. But now things have sort of evened out a little bit. And I guess the guys go back first, don't they?
Go south first.
The boys head south first.
Usually the case. But what happens is the young ones, male or female, will look like the female.
Right.
And so the one male that may be in the territory may come and go pretty well unnoticed as the young and the female, will come and go, and there'd be more activity and perhaps be observed more. So it may be a perception, but you're right. The males, the adult males, both adult male and females, will take off.
Oh, okay.
So once they're done, they start heading out, and they leave the kids behind.
Oh, I get it. So here's my question. This is, I know that toward the end of August is the time where bees really start to need sweets also, and they get really involved in our feeders, and sometimes to the point where the bees are making it impossible for hummingbirds to get in there. Do you have any suggestions for how to what to do?
I have a couple things. One is avoid hummingbird feeders that have yellow ports to them, because the yellow is more of an attractant to them than one that is like a solid, you know, where the ports are red.
Okay.
The bees will be more active in those feeders that are hung in the sunshine, in the bright sunshine. So,
okay.
You know, moving them more into the shade could cut some of that traffic to that.
All right.
There's also some hummingbird feeders that allow you to put little port protectors on them so that the bees aren't able to get into the nectar, but hummingbirds are still able to put their beak through that protector.
Yeah.
So it's like a little plastic mm-hmm. basket over the port.
Yeah,
or
we have
underneath.
That.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have that. I don't know that the bees are actually getting the nectar, but they're
just
they're
hanging
trying.
Around. Mm-hmm. And sometimes just a little bit of movement of that feeder, you know, 2, 3, 4 feet can even make a difference for those bees if they are accustomed to it being located in one location. Sometimes just a little bit of a movement can make a difference and keep the bees off.
And that's it. That will work for ants as well. If they follow a track, they lose
right.
the track. And then you can always move it back again, like a little shell game.
Right.
It's not as much fun to talk about ants and birds. It's much more fun to talk about the birds and the bees.
Well, then,
you start. Year,
go ahead.
Last year, what I tried doing was actually taking some of the nectar and soaking a piece of bread and putting it below to sort of attract the bees away.
Distract them, yes.
Yeah, that helped a little bit. And have you ever heard of that?
No.
Right.
I have not.
Nope. An alternative to the bread, I would think, would be sponge, because I've seen sponges filled with nectar to attract butterflies. So, you know, there's something that won't go bad on you over the summer, too. So,
hey, that is a brilliant idea. Oh, I'm really glad I called.
These are brilliant, brilliant people before us. Margie, thank you very much for calling in. We appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go over to Mary, who is with us from Rhinebeck. Hello, Mary.
Mary actually has the same question as Margie about the bees and the hummingbirds. So
back to the birds and the bees, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you want to ask another question, or are you okay? Has your curiosity been satisfied?
Since I got on, I guess I'll ask, what could I get ready to put out for the winter months for the birds? And is there anything that would attract the birds and keep away the squirrels?
Well, the squirrels is a lot about, it can be about placement of your feeders. We know how far and how high squirrels can jump. They can jump 10 feet horizontally and 4 to 5 feet straight up. So if you put a baffle on your pole, they won't, you know, that's above that 4 to 5 feet, then they can't jump right past it. If you put your whole feeding system 10 feet away from any jumping off points, they're just not physically able to make it there.
Okay.
So sometimes placement of your feeder can make a difference. There are a number of fairly effective feeders out there that perhaps like close under the weight of a squirrel. And then there's a couple foods that they're not that interested in. One of them is Niger seed or thistle seed. You hear them kind of used interchangeably,
yeah.
What you feed the finches. They're not crazy about that. It would need to be...
But it doesn't seem like anybody else is that crazy other than the finches about thistle.
Yeah, it's mostly the finches, though. You'll see chickadees and juncos and doves picking at it, but it's mostly a finch food. You're exactly mm-hmm. right there. But the other one is safflower seed. It's a white seed.
Mm-hmm.
that they aren't that crazy about. Now, it's no bird's absolute favorite seed, but if you're having problems with squirrels, it's also a problem solver with grackles, with starlings, so you can kind of keep away some of those, what we consider problems at our bird feeders with some straight safflower seed.
And it's not too early to start a feeding program if you don't have bird seed out there, and if you don't have bears in your neighborhood that you need to worry about. The birds will start coming to a well-stocked bird feeder and bring their young ones, and you'll help fatten them up and give them the energy for their trip south.
Okay. Great.
Fatten up and fire right.
Yes.
Mary, thank you very much for the telephone call. We appreciate it. Thank you. Let's go over to Natalie now in Poughkeepsie. Natalie, you were with us at the very beginning, and we thank you very much for your persistence, and welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm trying to identify a I saw on the Vassar College campus in Poughkeepsie. I didn't have my binoculars with me, so I'm going to do the best that I can with what I saw with my eyes.
All right. Okay.
The bird looked bigger than a red tail. Its head was either a dark gray or a black, as were its wings. And its chest was white but speckled with black feathers.
Okay.
Its beak was hooked with a thin, the end was thin and hooked down. And he appeared to me from where I was standing, which was on the ground, and he was up on the top of one of the buildings, to have really large eyes.
Well, I'm wondering, have you looked at the possibility of a young red-tailed hawk?
I haven't, because I see them very often. We actually have a pair that live very close to the house, so we see them daily. This bird looked very different to me.
Well, the young will look different than the adults. If you have an adult pair down there at Vassar College, I suspect that they probably have nested successfully and will have one or two young birds moving around down there. So that's what comes to mind. The white underneath with the speckles or the black, or the dark markings on it, to me suggests young red-tailed hawk. And also the head might appear black if you're looking against the sky at it. It'd actually be a deep chocolate brown.
Okay. All right, great. Well, thank you so much.
Well, good luck with that. And
let us know.
It's a good thing to have the red tail around. They'll be feasting on the mice that are foraging in there.
I love watching them. Natalie, thank you very much for the telephone call. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. Sue is in Red Hook, New York. Good afternoon, Sue.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Good. I have a question of identity. This little bird, we live in an area with a lot of trees and wetlands, so we see a lot of birds all the time. We enjoy them very much. And there's lots of bushes around with berries and things for them to feed on, so I don't have a feeder. But we have a deck and with a retractable awning. And a couple of times in the past, sparrows have come and tried to build a nest right where the awning meets the door. And I've always removed the nest successfully because it's a very bad place for them to be building a nest and having babies, with the awning moving back and forth and people coming in and out of the door all the time. Well, about a month ago, there's two pretty little birds. They were about the size of a sparrow, a long beak and a tail, a tail facing up about a 45-degree angle and a tan color. They started building a nest, so I went out and I took a broom and I knocked it down and went in the house, and then lo and behold, they came back about an hour later and they had started putting it back up again. This happened 5 times. I got to the point where I even took a hose and tried to knock it down, and every time they would come back. And finally I said, okay, birds, you win. So they're there. They've had their nest there. They've got their babies, and I think the babies seem to be bigger than the mom and dad, but I think they're just about all gone. I don't see them flying up to the nest anymore. It's very hard to see if there's any more birds in there.
Well, it sounds to me like you had a pair of Carolina wrens move in.
Oh.
And which are delightful birds.
They are pretty.
And a beautiful song. A very energetic song.
Yes.
I enjoy hearing whenever I have them nesting somewhere near where I am. But
can you duplicate that song for us?
Well, actually, there is a nice mnemonic out there that captures the essence of the song verbally for our ears.
Okay.
And it sounds like it's saying a very musical and energetic tea kettle, tea kettle, tea kettle, tea kettle.
Well, oh, that's this, good.
Tea kettle, tea kettle.
Yeah, that sounds similar. I would have just kind of say it was dirup, dirup.
Oh, they do that too. That's their call note when they're a little bit alarmed.
That's the type of tea they actually want.
A little herbal tea mix.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
go ahead. That's just very interesting.
And the nestlings in it sounds like, since it's a little bit larger, that might actually be a young cowbird that has laid an egg in the.
So there go those cowbirds again.
Yeah, those cowbirds are back. Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm just wondering, are all birds this determined? I mean, I thought if you took the nest down right away, that they would go somewhere else and look for some other place to
ordinarily,
build a nest.
Ordinarily, that's the case. But these birds must like you very, very much.
I guess.
What's not to like, Sue?
Yeah. Oh, gee.
Sue, thank you very much for the call. Wonderful to hear from you. Thank you. We love your calls, and we have more time for them. So feel free to give us a shout. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-34-TALK-1. If you can't get us that way, you can go to wamc.org/voxpop. We would love to hear from you. We're talking about birds this afternoon. Rich Guthrie is here, Nancy Castillo, and we welcome your phone calls. We'll continue our conversation on Vox Pop after this short break.
Support comes from Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc & Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocAndWealthStrategies.com. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenAndPerrin.com. Snow Farm, the New England Craft Program. August workshops include woodworking, glass blowing, batik, watercolors, and more. Space available in weekend or week-long classes in Williamsburg, Massachusetts. Snowfarm.org. And the Clark Art Institute, Williamstown, Massachusetts, now reopened with a newly expanded campus and the return of the permanent collection on view. ClarkArt.edu.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. I'm Joe Donahue. Rich Guthrie and Nancy Casillo are here. We are talking about birds this afternoon on Vox Pop. And again, we welcome your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Before we go back to the phones, though, Rich, you have a couple things, a couple dates to put into our date books and into our phones so that we remember of events that are coming up.
Yes, indeed. One of the big enjoyable happenings this time of year is the migration of nighthawks. And I would invite on behalf of the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, anybody who's interested in seeing nighthawks and learning more about them, there will be a gathering at the Albany Pine Bush Preserve Discovery Center on the evening of August 4th, I think it was. Gee whiz, I forgot to put the date down.
August 4th
anyway, check
is
the Albany.
Is it August 14th?
No, early. August 20 something.
Okay.
Let me get the date back. Sorry about that.
That's
but you
right.
can go to the HudsonMohawkBirdClub.org.
Hold on. I'll do it right now.
Okay.
Hudson Mohawk
Bird Club. Is it HMBC.org?
HMBC.net. Sorry, Joe. HMBC.net.
Okay.
And that is at 6 p.m. on the given evening. And where you'll see, they have the opportunity, if the conditions are better than my preparation here, you'll have the chance to see nighthawks and learn all about nighthawks as they migrate through the Albany Pine Bush.
You were dead on. You were dead on. It's August 24th at from 6 to 8:30, counting common nighthawks the first evening, and it's I guess it runs what, the 24th through the 30th, and then
this is the first one, and you can learn more about that by going to the HudsonMohawkBirdClub.net.
HMBC.net.
That is correct.
All right.
And then one other on September 11th at Thursday evening. I'll be on board the good ship Clearwater on the Hudson River, where we'll be doing an evening sail, looking for birds and talking about birds in the Hudson Valley. This is sponsored by the North River Friends of Clearwater. That is at 5 p.m. on Thursday, September 11th, down in Coxsackie, New York, in Greene County. We'll be setting sail out of there and going out, and then on the way down, we'll be talking about birds, looking at birds, eagles and egrets and the like. And on the way back, we'll be joining in on some sea shanties.
Sounds like a lot of fun. So
a lot
that's
of fun.
September 11th.
September 11th at 5 p.m.
And can people find more information by
Clearwater.org.
Clearwater.org. Nancy, how can you fold a pigeon?
What we have sitting in front of us all is an origami passenger pigeon. And we at Wild Birds Unlimited are calling attention to the 100th anniversary of the passing of the last passenger pigeon. Now, this is a bird that used to number in the billions. They were seen in our area, and people that observed it a century ago would say that the skies were darkened as millions of these birds would pass overhead. Unfortunately, with human development and overhunting, there are now zero passenger pigeons, and the last one passed away 100 years ago in September. So we're marking that with an event called, or with a project in our store, where we're asking our customers and listeners that if you're interested in folding an origami passenger pigeon, bringing it into or sending it to us at Wild Birds Unlimited, what we'll do is that for every folded passenger pigeon we get, we'll hang it in our store where we're trying to recreate a flock of these extinct birds. And for every one we get, we will donate $1 to the American Bird Conservancy, up to $500. So if you'd like to get involved, you can come in the store, pick up a sheet, the origami sheet. They're also available for download if you go to our website, and that's saratogasprings.wbu.com. You'll be able to get a passenger pigeon that you can download. But it's to call light to human-caused extinctions, and that no bird is so numerous that we shouldn't be concerned about them. About losing them.
And these are really cool. The origami itself is really
sounds
neat.
Like a fun project well for the family.
Absolutely. Foldtheflock.org. Cool. Let's go back to the phone calls, and we got everything in, right?
Yep.
Okay,
thank you.
Excellent. Let's go back to the phone calls and talk to the wonderful people who are waiting for us here. We go to Janet in Red Hook. Hello, Janet.
Yes, hi there. Enjoying listening. I have a bird ID question also. It was a bird that looked rather woodpecker-ish. I'm no expert, but it was at a restaurant theater in Hillsdale, Massachusetts, and it had sort of a whitish belly with kind of woodpecker-ish black and white coloring and a splotch on its chest. And I looked all through Sibley, and the woodpecker was the closest I could, you know, come to it, but I wondered if you had another thought.
How big was this bird?
Well, I don't know what to use for scale. I mean, it was sort of more roundish looking than a woodpecker. You know, the woodpecker pictures I saw were more, you know, elongated.
Did you say there was something on his chest?
Some kind of what?
Did you say that there was some coloration on his chest?
Yeah, a splotch of red.
Like a triangle of red?
It's sort of a roundish splotch, which was rather remarkable given the weight on the belly and then the black and white coloring on the top of the bird.
Well, I'm just wondering, it's a mystery so far, but I'm wondering if you had a chance to look at Sapsucker that will show red underneath.
Yeah, I did. The rest of it didn't seem to conform to what I saw, but I didn't really observe the beak. So I'll look at Sapsucker again. But
and I was,
it was really, yeah, go ahead.
I was thinking, no, not in the woodpecker family at all, but a rose-breasted grosbeak.
Well, that certainly would fit the pattern, especially if you did not have a look at the beak. The beak on the grosbeak is, as the name suggests, pretty big.
okay.
And they will have that red patch on them. And if there are fruit, let's say a crab apple or a cherry tree outside that restaurant, they would be attracted to feed on the berries of fruit.
Yeah, they had a feeder with just regular.
That even makes more sense. Yeah.
So, okay, so what kind of grosbeak?
Rose breasted.
Rose, what is it? I'm sorry.
Rose, R-O-S-E, breasted. Grosbeak.
Okay, I'll take a look at it. Thank you. That
very good.
Hopefully ends the mystery. I appreciate it. Thanks for the show, everybody.
He's a gorgeous bird.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the call. Let's go now to I don't know. Let's try the. Yes, that is on. I don't know why. All right, Jeff. I think I lost you. So let's go to Bill in Half Moon. Bill, go ahead.
Hi. Great show.
Thank you.
Really enjoy it. Just wanted to point out, I have a couple of hummingbird feeders, and I also have some other people that are feeding on it. I have downy woodpeckers, the hairy woodpeckers, and also a rose or a red-bellied woodpecker. They've all learned how to feed at the hummingbird feeders.
Wow, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and also wanted to ask. I wanted to introduce mealworms into my feeding program and wondered if there's what type of feeder works best for those.
Assuming that you're going to be using live mealworms, which
I would probably be using the freeze-dried.
Okay. The live are more attractive to the birds than the freeze-dried. The freeze-dried, you know, any bowl with drainage then would be able to handle that. So.
And once they discover them, they won't last long because they'll go right to them.
They're very, you know, if you get the freeze-dried type, one of the things you'll have to deal with is that they could blow away. So
you just
have to make sure that, you know, it's deep enough sides or some type of cover that they aren't blown away. So I'll just put in another plug. Live mealworms are much preferred by the birds.
And there are containers that you can put live mealworms in. A saucer or a cup-shaped like a feeder. And like I say, once they find them, they'll be waiting for you to bring them out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I put them out, would give them to the – I don't let necessarily live in bluebird-type habitat, which is what you think about feeding mealworms.
Yeah, I do have bluebirds around here, and I just wanted to use those to attract them more.
Yep. And, you know, they would love you for that. So.
So excellent. Good luck with that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Again, I'm looking out at my hummingbird feeder, and there's two downy woodpeckers working away at it.
Well, they learn by watching, and these guys are smart birds.
They really do. They really do. There was one little female that started it, and then another one, and then all of a sudden the red belly was there. And that might be, for that other lady that called, that might be what she saw. With the red splotch on its tummy.
Oh yeah, I think we got it. She sounded like it was more on the breast and the red on the red belly woodpecker is really hard to see.
It's hard to see, I know.
Yes.
Yeah. I have the grosbeaks too. They're a fascinating bird.
Very good, sir.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. Move over now to Robert, who joins us in Charlemont. Hello, Robert.
Hi, Joe, and hi, Rich and Nancy. I'm enjoying the show, and I have a little bit of a phenomena to describe and question. I live along the Deerfield River, along Zor Gap, and I have a hiking trail in back of the house, and along the way there's some ledges, and last beginning of June, I found two very large white eggs. No bird was there, and later on came to discover two very fluffy vultures. I have yet to see the mother, although I occasionally identify it in the trees. I thought surely by the end of July these birds would have fledged. We also have ravens up in that area, and they had already fledged. And as of yesterday, I saw these birds up there. They're standing around the nest. I have yet to see the mother, but they're fat, and they still have not fledged. So it's very fascinating. This has been quite a wonderful experience to watch this on a daily basis. And I'm just wondering, how long does a vulture take to fledge? And it is very interesting that it is seems to be a social bird, much like the ravens.
Well, first of all, you're one of the very few people that I know that has actually seen a vulture nest. They are very clever, as numerous as they are. They're very clever at concealing their nest site. And so good for you on that.
It's an amazing nest. Actually, they have three or four entrances into it, and it's along a ledge with boulders.
Yep, typical.
My little Yorkshire Terrier and I came upon a bear sort of scavenging around the nest, and it didn't discover them, but we came to discover that these vultures make a hissing sound that at a distance sounds exactly like a rattlesnake.
Well, and a note of caution about that is if you do get too close to them, look out, because one of their protective measures that a vulture will adopt is if they feel threatened, and the young sitting in a nest will just simply throw up on you.
I have not had that happen, but thank you very much for the warning.
Don't want that to
nice
happen.
No, doesn't sound like you would.
The bee nests that usually feed on dead skunks in the middle of the road and bring their food back to the babies, you really don't want to mix up with that.
Well, no, the Yorkies had enough encounters out here with porcupines and skunks.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So, thank you very much. Just another quick question. Vultures typically, it seems like they stay in the nest all summer. Will they be migrating at some point, or are they known to fledge at a certain time after they've hatched?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. I think my experience with vulture nests is quite limited, but they ought to be ready to fledge pretty soon. And yes, they will migrate typically around the end of September and into October.
Wow.
They'll be gone by December for the most part.
Wow.
Anyone that's hanging around after that is probably not a turkey vulture, but maybe a black vulture, different species. So,
okay. And how can I tell the difference between the two?
The black vulture has large white patches near the tip of the wing.
Okay.
And the turkey vulture is simply a gray and black two-tone colored wing.
I think this might be a black vulture, although I'm looking at the juveniles.
Can't tell by that.
Oh, okay.
You'll have to wait till late. The young turkey vultures will have a black head. They look very much like black vultures.
I'll be looking for that.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the show. And, Joe, you're one of the best interviewers out there. You're right up there with Terry Gross. So.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
That's
have
very
a good
nice
day.
Of you to say. Thank you very much. Let's go over to Jay in New Berlin. Hello, Jay.
Hi there.
Is it Joe or Jay?
Jay.
Oh, excellent.
Like the bird.
Like the bird.
Yes, how appropriate. Yes.
Yes. So I have a sound coming out of the woods. We're surrounded by, in a valley. We're in Butternut, in the Butternut Valley area. And there's a sound that happens from a bird in the evening. It's probably around, a little before dusk, which is like a trilling sound.
A what?
I don't know. Trilling.
Trilling.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's absolutely magnificent. I can't find this thing, but I hear it often, and it's usually, like I say, in the evening. Any ideas?
A quick thought comes to mind. It's going back to the Carolina Wren that has that kind of. Brr, brr, brr.
No, it's more like a flute.
Yeah.
Like
that's
a what?
A flute.
A flute.
Like a flute.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's different then. Yes.
Yeah.
It sounds to me, one of the thrushes, and probably the wood thrush, which is one of the most delightful sounds in nature.
Okay. I may lose you because I'm driving through mountains right now.
Well, we may lose you too because we're driving out of the show.
You're running out of time.
Yes, but that's okay.
So it sounds to me like you have the wood thrush there. And if you do, enjoy every note.
Right. First thing in the morning, last thing at night.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank everyone who called in. I apologize to the many people that we left on the line, but a huge thanks to our guests this afternoon, Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo, for joining us. It is always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Both very soon. Thank you very much. Support for Vox Pop comes from Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years, from digital to offset, color copies, scan, logos, and more. Paradise Copies. Stories.com. Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring a variety of hydrangeas and blooming perennials, Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, Sundays 9 to 4, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, with the summer calendar of weekly group hikes, volunteer fairs, classes, public programs, and special events, mohonkpreserve.org/events for information. Dr. Joseph Cohen, optometrist, eye examinations, and classic eyewear in historic Uptown Kingston. Most insurances accepted. Optical diversity in the Hudson Valley. CohenOptometry.com. Thank you once again for joining us for Vox Pop this afternoon. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Anonymous Sandy for answering phones. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Joe Donahue. Make sure you take WAMC with you. Download our new mobile app for streaming audio, headlines, podcasts, and much, much more. All you have to do is go to iTunes or Google Play App Store, search WAMC, and install. And again, you can find this show or find past Vox Pops by going to WAMC.org. Tomorrow on the program, it's Food Friday. They'll be talking about picnics. Stay tuned now for a news update.